Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Knicks, breaking down the Knicks' second preseason game today. It is Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here with you, as always. Breaking down what was ultimately a pretty disappointing loss, a 115-99 loss at home to Washington. Gavin, probably not one of the more memorable Knicks games in recent memory.
No, but we were able to find some positives. Marcus Morris, another excellent performance. RJ Barrett, not outstanding stats, but pretty good overall. Then we get into the point guard battle, which, at least until Dennis Smith Jr. comes back, is Elfrid Payton versus Frank Ntilikina. Our updated thoughts on that. And we wrap things up by talking about Alonzo Trier's excellent performance, 14 points in 17 minutes, and other fun news and notes. That next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Knox foul from behind. Count it, one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Ntilikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome to Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. Quick reminder, today's show is brought to you in part by Indochino for custom menswear. You can check them out, Indochino.com. So, Gavin, this game was interesting. I'll just give a quick rundown of what happened for those that weren't able to watch it, although, you know, the results themselves aren't so important during these preseason games. It's more what we see during the game rather than the final score. But the Knicks, they wound up losing 115-99 to the Wizards at home. They led by as much as 15 in the first quarter, and they were cruising. Things looked like they were going well. They led 30-24 at the end of the first quarter, and then got outscored 41-17 in the second quarter. They did manage to keep it close pretty much the rest of the way out. They actually technically won the second half by 2 points, but the damage was kind of done by that 41-17 second quarter. So I guess in some respects, the second half was sort of redeeming in a way, especially considering that the whole game doesn't really matter in terms of preseason. But Gavin, I figure we could just hop right in. I don't think anything else needs to be said about the result of the game. We could probably just hop right into the players. I don't know about you. I really enjoyed watching Marcus Morris. He had 21 points on 8 of 13 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3. Currently now for the preseason, he is shooting a pretty robust 19 points on 56% from the field and almost 55% from 3. So probably not very sustainable long term, but I think that even if he can, if on the volume that he's on right now, about 13 shots a game, if he can maintain, you know, shooting the same percentages, say, he did last year, which was about 45% from the field and like 38% from three, I think it would be in pretty good shape. Like, he actually looks like he's shaping up to be the guy that can maybe be, you know, while RJ Barrett's finding his footing, while Kevin Knox is finding his footing, all these guys, he could be the guy that's kind of like the vet that takes on the scoring load this year, along with obviously Julius Randle, who still has kind of been a little bit quiet so far.
Yeah, and obviously those numbers would be higher if he didn't decide to hit Justin Anderson in the head with the basketball, whack-a-mole style in the middle of his first game. But yeah, no, he was awesome. And I mean, that mid-range shot he has is pretty deadly. I mean, again, you want to see a bigger sample size. You want to see a sample size that is against a team that's not the Wizards and has some credible wing defenders. But yeah, I mean, he's clearly is pretty much more talented than anyone that Washington was going to throw at him. But his jumper legitimately does look really good. And I haven't watched a lot of him, honestly, over the last couple of years. And I watched a lot of him when he was a younger player in Phoenix. And I'm stunned by how much more consistent he's gotten on his shot. And it seems like all the talent that he's always possessed is finally starting to translate on at least a slightly more consistent basis. So I'm excited for him. I mean, I said when they signed him, I thought there was a pretty decent chance he was going to end up outside of Mitchell Robinson being the Knicks' best player this year. And I don't think that's totally implausible, but I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up averaging like 18 points per game on pretty decent efficiency, which would sort of make him the bargain of the summer for the Knicks. RJ Barrett, I thought also a pretty exciting second game for him. Not that he was spectacular, but really good night shooting the three ball, 2 for 5 from beyond the arc. Not as good from 2-point range, just 3 for 10, but it is fascinating to continue to watch him develop. And I just got excited that he got off to such a good start after last game, Alex, when he missed his first 4 threes. This time coming out, had that really pretty Euro step to score inside, then hit that pull-up jumper in transition. Camera cut right to him. He was kind of mean mugging. MSG was erupting. It sort of felt like a little moment and a little like initial connection between the Knicks crowd and RJ. And I mean, fine game the rest of the way, but I just sort of appreciated that happened.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he definitely connected with the crowd right away. He started off like totally on fire. I think he made his first 3 shots and then he missed a 3-pointer, and then things kind of spiraled a little bit for a little bit there. And then he picked it back up in the second half again, sort of like how he did in the first game, except for he didn't have the hot start in the first game. But honestly, like his numbers, like our numbers, I could totally live with if he even averaged something close to this for the whole season. I mean, really, he shot 40% from the floor. He shot 40% from 3. He had 7 rebounds. I mean, it was pretty solid all around game. Like, I'd like to see, I actually want to see them start giving him a little bit more ball handling responsibility and let him try to, you know, use those passing chops that, you know, we know that he has, that we saw kind of in summer league a little bit. And we've even seen like he's made a couple nice like baseline reads, you know, when he's driving baseline, kicking to someone in the corner and stuff already in the preseason. So I want to see more of that. But I mean, the guy rebounds like a fiend. Like, I really like the energy that he brings on the rebounds. And to the point that, like, Fizdale must have liked it too, because there was even one point in the second half, Fizdale was kind of experimenting with some smaller lineups. And there was one where he had, I want to say it was Frank, I think it was Trier, Ellington, RJ, and Julius out there. And that was the 5. So really, like, RJ was the 4. So it was pretty interesting. Like, I definitely think, you know, in today's NBA, like, for stretches, you can run him out there potentially as a 4. And, you know, I know you and I think are in agreement that he's probably long term a 3. But, it, you know, to your point about his layup moves and stuff, his very first one of the game, he had kind of like, he was almost getting tied up and just muscled his way through the contact and finished, you know, right at the rim. And I think he did that with his right, if I'm not mistaken, as well, which is great, because that was something that he really looked, as a natural lefty, he looked like he was really struggling with his right hand in summer league and looked like he was kind of forcing the issue a little bit. Already, I think he's twice as comfortable with his right hand as when we saw him in summer league. So that's a plus. And just that whole concept of that he has like the NBA body, quote unquote, like right away out of college is definitely bearing out so far. Like he's definitely strong enough for this league. He's definitely able to muscle his way through contact. And I think he already has pretty decently high level body control and everything too. So I, you know, this game, just as much as last game, I was very impressed with him. So he was definitely a, you know, a silver lining in what was ultimately kind of a crappy game.
No, for sure. And I mean, it's ultimately, I think a couple of people on Twitter mentioned this too, and it's sort of been my pervading opinion throughout, but I need him to keep having nights like this from the 3-point line, like somewhere around, if he vacillates between 2 for 5 and 2 for 6, just hitting enough that defenses consistently respect him, because I mean, at this point he's not big enough or athletic enough or quick enough to consistently win against high-level NBA defenders if they don't respect his shot. So it's ultimately going to come down to that. And if he keeps hitting open ones at a pretty high rate, I mean, defenses are going to start shifting how they play him, and it will give him an opportunity to finish around the rim and use his strength, use his creativity, use his touch. So to me, that's the biggest thing. With that, let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about the point guard battle next on Locked On Knicks.
Hey, are you in the New York area and looking to promote your business to a young, predominantly male demographic?
Then Locked On Knicks is the podcast for you. 80% of our listeners fall between the ages of 18 and 44, and 98% of those listeners are male. As the top Knicks podcast on the market, we offer a unique opportunity to engage with basketball fans in the city.
If interested in an ad spot or live read, email lockedonknicks@gmail.com for more information on pricing and availability. Our rates are very affordable compared to radio and offer a chance to reach an audience on an ever-growing platform.
All right, let's talk point guard battle now on Locked On Knicks. Pretty atrocious shooting night for the point guards. I sound about as bad as the Knicks played tonight. Elfrid Payton and Frank Ntilikina combining to go 2 for 16 from the field, which isn't spectacular, but I thought Frank clearly, and I am biased for sure, clearly looked the better of the two. I mean, Payton was atrocious. He was 0 for 9, did have 8 rebounds, but only 2 assists, didn't score, never got to the free throw line. Not that Frank was, significantly better, but it's just clear that he's made a step forward in terms of his ball handling and obviously brings what he does on the defensive end. And Payton tonight just had, I guess the rebounds, but on the whole, like, zero redeeming qualities.
Yeah, I'm basically, like, in terms of, like, hot takey stuff, I'm fully to the point now where I'm like, Frank needs to start in this next game, period. Because it's like you can't look at any of the like qualifiers that Fizz places on that position and realistically say that Peyton's doing them better than Frank right now. Like, I mean, let me make this clear. Like, I don't want to crap on Peyton. Like, I actually wanted Peyton to do well. I want him to hopefully do well enough to, you know, be traded at the trade deadline. If I'm being completely honest, like, I want him to be good enough to get traded to some team to be their backup point guard, or like some team that loses their starting point guard, but they're not really a point guard heavy team that, you know, just needs someone to kind of run the team and hopefully still guide them to the playoffs, whatever. Like, that's what I'm hoping Peyton can become. But he certainly doesn't look like it through these first couple games. Like, he's shooting atrociously. I mean, you already mentioned he was 0 for 9 in this game. And for the first two preseason games, I mean, small sample size, obviously, but he is shooting a robust 14% through two games so far. And Frank is shooting 29%, which still isn't great, but is literally double that. But the other thing is that, you know, Frank is doing what Fizdale wants. He's breaking down the defense. He's looking for his own shot. I mean, Frank is averaging in 21 minutes a game, he's taking almost 9 attempts per game, which is pretty high. He's actually like in the top six on the team so far in field goal attempts per game. So, I mean, that's what you want to see out of Frank. And I think that number would probably go up a little bit too if he got like starter minutes as well. So, and honestly, like, the plus minus numbers have been bearing it out so far that Frank, you know, is doing better. Like, Frank is averaging a +8 and Elfrid is averaging a team worst -17.5 so far. And Frank's +8 is also the best on the team. So it's, you know, you can only read so much into those numbers, but plus minus is a pretty decent measure on such a small sample size like this. And I think it's just for all the reasons that we always talk about with Frank, that he goes out there, he's unselfish, he's looking to set up his teammates. He's just, you know, trying to run the offense rather than just freewheeling and whatever offense that there is to run, because I question that a little bit too at this point. But I just think the move would be to put Frank out there with the starters and see what you can get going right from the start in the next game, and hopefully, you know, build some chemistry between Frank and RJ and stuff like that. And even if Dennis Smith Jr. is available and, you know, healthy, bring him off the bench and ease him back into action, give Frank his shot and just see how things go. But that's just kind of how I'm feeling right now.
No, I'm 100% with you. I was disappointed when the Knicks were really struggling at the end of the first quarter, or maybe it got to the early second at this point, and Fizdale put the starters back in, that he put Payton in and didn't include Frank with that group. I was initially It just sort of seemed like, okay, like you guys are screwing this up. Like we got to get our best five out there. I'm like, all right, so that's clearly Frank, RJ, Marcus Morris, Julius Randle, and Mitchell Robinson right now. And they just, he didn't do that, which was a little frustrating. But I think it's in some ways, Frank is almost more valuable on nights like this in a team like this when everyone's playing ISO ball. When Bobby Portis, when someone told him that you're not allowed to pass this game, I think you really, like someone like Frank, who seemingly would rather pass than shoot a decent amount of the time, like he stands out in a good way, and he makes that having so many ISO first, shoot first guys on the floor more plausible because he's in so many ways the antithesis of that. So I think it just makes him all the more important. I mean, all that being said, I think we should note, and again, it's only two games in, so I'm not like flipping out or anything, but at some point, I mean, Frank, he does have to shoot the ball well, and that might not be a necessity for being the best point guard on the Knicks, just given who the other options are. And I can't say anything bad about DSJ yet because we haven't seen him, but we want to be encouraged by him. We want to be excited by him. Like, I was really enthusiastic about his handle tonight. He had that beautiful and one. He had a couple of nice passes. But he at some point, the shots just have to go in. And that's been the rub with him his whole career. So I'm just waiting for a five-game stretch where he shoots 45% would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly with you in that regard. Like, I think that, you know, he has to start shooting better as well, and I still feel like it'll come. Like, he's getting good looks, you know what I mean? Like, and he's really starting, the big thing is he's starting to get more confident with throwing his body around the rim. He had one really just beautiful finish in this game where he like drove right into contact in the lane. He kind of did it with like a little bit of a hezzy dribble, and, you know, really found space for himself, like created it, and then drove right into contact and finished through an and one. That was great. That was one of his buckets. The other one was he had like a little like screen that he ran around and, you know, did one of his little, I think it was a screen or whatever. Either way, he wound up on one with one of his like elbow jumpers. That's kind of becoming one of his little signatures after FIBA play. And he made one of those as well. So it's been encouraging. Like, I like what I'm seeing out of Frank. And you know, like I said, unfortunately, like, my stance on this whole thing is, like, if Frank was shooting like shit and Elfrid Payton was shooting good, and, you know, you can make a reasonable case of, like, okay, well, Alfred's a better offensive option, whatever, we think he's going to work better with the starters, then, like, cool, but Alfred's shooting like crap, too, so, you know, why not take a chance on Frank and see how he does with the starters? Like, even if he continues shooting a cruddy percentage, at least he's doing other things that helps the team win. And honestly, the Knicks starting lineup has plenty of guys that want the ball and want to shoot it now. Because you have really the three guys from shooting guard through power forward. You know, RJ Barrett, Marcus Morris, and Julius Randle. All three of those guys want to shoot the ball plenty. So it's not like Frank even like needs to shoot the ball in that starting lineup either. He could just be content to, you know, find open teammates and stuff and, you know, just find flamethrower Marcus Morris over in the corner or something. But I don't know. I guess that's ran over. But that's just my basic thoughts on it now. I'm ready to just see Frank in there starting rather than stupid Elfrid Payton already. And it only took two preseason games.
Yeah, I might shut off the next one if Payton jogs out there with the star. I don't get the logic. Anyways, let's take another break. Let's come back and talk a little bit about Alonzo Trier's game and then wrap up any loose ends we left to be unwrapped. That next on Locked On Knicks.
All right, welcome to the third and final segment of Locked On Knicks. Doing a little housekeeping. I think we'll probably start with Alonzo Trier here, Gavin. He's our boy. You know, we both love Alonzo Trier on this show. He shot 4-7 in this game, 2-4 from 3, 4-4 from the free throw line. He had 14 points in just under 17 minutes. So pretty impressive performance. He was sat for the whole first half, which was kind of weird, especially after he sat for basically the whole second half, kind of what you assumed was a punishment during the last game. So that was a little weird to me. But other than that, like, once he finally came in, he kind of did what the Knicks needed him to do. He came in and got some buckets. But I was telling you pre-show, it was a little concerning to me, like, why he did good today. And the reason was because the Knicks offense had basically just fallen apart in the second half. Well, and in the, I mean, it was mostly at the end of the first half, but the Knicks offense was kind of just falling apart for, you know, basically from the end of the first quarter all the way through the end of the game. And so as a result, they kept giving it to guys and just trying to have them ISO, and nobody was having success. And then you finally throw ISO Zoe out there and he has some success, like he, you know, like he's likely to do when you put him in those situations. So it was like encouraging and discouraging at the same time to me. But he also, I mean, he hit a spot up look from three, if I'm not mistaken, or like a one dribble, you know, 3-point take, which was good. He was driving into the lane, which is obviously something you want to see him do a lot of. And I don't think he really took any bad shots or anything, which he was definitely taking some bad shots on Monday. So in that regard, I was pretty happy with Trier.
Yeah, if he's I guess I should say this with the qualifier, did have 5 turnovers in 17 minutes. But like, to me, like he's just so clearly like one of the Knicks, like few and only like effective offensive options, especially at the guard spot where they just have such a dearth of shooting. Like, I don't understand how he doesn't play more. And I mean, clearly there's something up there, and maybe it's like an internal thing, or like he's not working hard enough in practice, or he's not watching enough film, or showed up late once earlier this week. Like, you never know. Like, it could be a million different things. So I don't want to harp on it too much, but if the regular season comes around and he's not like the first guy off the bench and playing the most minutes of anyone off the bench, like I just don't get why you're playing Bobby ISO Portis 30 minutes to go 3-for-9 and like walk around like looking like a lunatic versus Trier, who is I think really good. And I don't know, just it annoys me a little bit. So I would like more minutes for Alonzo Trier. I'd like a bigger role for Alonzo Trier. I swear to God, his agent is not paying me to say this. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me that he only played half this game, essentially.
Yeah, no doubt. I feel like we could just briefly touch on Mitchell Robinson. He had a really tough game. Lots of really cruddy fouls. He only played not even 11 minutes, which was ridiculous. Didn't block a single shot either, because he was just hacking pretty much the whole game. So hope to see a better effort from Mitch. I don't know if we have to add anything else on that, because there isn't even really anything to talk about as far as how he played. We could touch real quick. I mean, we've already kind of talked about Bobby Portis, so I don't feel a need to say much more on him. He shot the ball way too much. every time the ball touched his hands, it looked like he was looking to take a shot. I do think we should talk. Yeah, it was really bad. It was like painful to watch. I do think we should talk just for a moment about Julius Randle, who put together a solid but yet still kind of not quite what I'm expecting effort from him again. He had 14 points, 4 of 8 shooting, shot 1 of 3 from 3, 5 of 5 from the free throw line, which is good. He had 8 boards, 4 assists, 5 turnovers. I guess, like, I'm still just, like, waiting for them to treat, like, Julius Randle like their featured option, like I thought he was going to be. It just doesn't seem like they're putting him in a ton of situations to succeed as far as, like, getting him barreling towards the hoop and stuff, you know, in ways that could be successful for him. They definitely have him doing a lot of playmaking, because he almost led the team in assists again. Wayne Ellington came in as a dark horse there and led the team in assists. But, you know, he's definitely doing the playmaking thing. But the, you know, as far as him being like a featured scoring option, I still feel a little bit like we haven't seen that yet. I don't know about you, though, Gavin.
No, I think it's an interesting point. And our guy, Macri, in his post-game Periscope made, I think, an astute observation on that and said, like, look, you don't want to just overreact to any team-wide trends this early, because it's 10 new players, 2 rookies. And I guess the logical, like, leap off of that is, You gotta, when you're measuring individuals, you gotta say, all right, how much of it is them? How much of it is how they're affected by playing with a lot of new teammates? And I think everyone is just sort of finding their footing. Like, it's sort of an ideal environment for someone like Marcus Morris, who's a lot more developed and efficient as an ISO scorer than a lot of these guys. He's more mature, and he's a better shooter than someone like Bobby Portis, and way ahead of someone like RJ Barrett and Frank Ntilikina. So he's going to look good. And then someone like Randall, who's been pretty decently efficient, has thrown a few good passes, but he's just still trying to figure out where he fits, and it's awkward to just totally assert yourself when you're the new guy. But I do think some of that falls on Fizdale, because, and I think you made an excellent point when you said that they didn't really do a lot of stuff that got him barreling towards the basket. There should be plays where he's running off screens, and it's the Knicks point guard job to say, hey, you're going to get him on the run with some momentum, moving in the right direction. And I might have missed it. I mean, we watched this game kind of late at night. I'm a little out of it, so I'm sorry if I just didn't see it. But I really didn't. And the fact of the matter is, for Randall, for all of his talent, for all of his offensive ability, those are the situations where he should be scoring. It should be on set plays that are sprung to give him a little bit of an advantage. It should be in transition. It shouldn't be just him attacking one-on-one in the half court, because that's what he falls into a lot of his bad habits. Like, I think his first shot of the game today was an off-the-dribble three. He shouldn't, unless he got significantly better at it in the offseason, and we just don't know it yet, I don't think he should be taking an off-the-dribble three all year unless the shot clock is dying or the game clock is dying. Like, he should be scoring in the context of an offense, and I don't really think Fizdale has given him an infrastructure to shine. And whether that's just a matter of time, or it's ultimately a failing of David Fizdale that we're going to fully discover over the course of this year, remains to be seen. But that's sort of the biggest thing that I'm looking out for right now.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, I definitely think you got to put Julius in better situations, too. I mean, you were right. His first take was a off-the-dribble three, and then his second take was even worse. It was like he drove into like four people because they couldn't create any space for him. And I'm pretty sure he got blocked on his second attempt. So, yeah, they definitely got to. I mean, I actually think that there's a real possibility. And I think we talked about this on one of our shows preseason in the offseason, I should say, that, you know, I think it could be interesting to do some 4-5 pick and roll even with Julius Randle and Mitchell Robinson. Like, that's an offensive possibility that I'm intrigued by, because I think Julius Randle can legitimately, you know, get enough ahead of steam and make the turn well enough like a guard that he could, you know, exploit those and at the very least draw a foul by kind of throwing his weight around and you know, driving right into the switching defender onto him, or just find Mitch. Like, he's got the passing ability to find Mitch streaking to the hoop also. And both of them are pretty nimble, like, for their position as far as, you know, getting ahead of their man and stuff. So, I mean, that's something to look for. And, you know, you can run pick and pops for him if you want. I feel like I haven't seen him run a ton of pick and roll either. And it's like, at least get him in some of those sets. Like, try to get a mismatch on him. You know, if you could get him with if you can strand a point guard or a shooting guard on Julius Randle, forget about it. Like, that's 2 points. Like, he's so good in the post that that's like easy money. So they need to start looking for those sort of things, I think. Trying to think if there's anybody else we really need to touch on. Taj Gibson, I thought, was solid again. I don't feel like there's too much to talk about with him, other than the fact that I think that if need be, he's going to be a damn good role player on this team this year. Same kind of goes for Wayne Ellington. We did get to see Iggy Brazdeikis for almost 7 minutes for the first time, because he didn't play in the first game. Did you have any thoughts on Iggy? I didn't really.
He just, like, really, he floated. I mean, you know, Mark Titus, now ex-Ringer writer and former Ohio State walk-on, popularized the concept of a trillion, which is where you get zeros across the board in a box score. And Brazdeikis almost pulled that off in 7 minutes, which is 7 trillion is really rare. Usually the highest you see is like a four. He missed 2 threes, but literally didn't do anything else on the floor. And again, it's a second round pick playing his first ever NBA game, so you cut the guy some slack. I want to see him come out and be more aggressive. Like, even on his jumper, like his first one, like, he way overshot it, which, I mean, hey, it makes sense. Like, if your first ever NBA game is at MSG, I think it's totally logical. But I hope we see him kind of get back to the aggressive, confident player he was throughout summer league and start attacking the basket a little bit more. But obviously that's going to take some time. It would just be nice if he had like a moment or two before the end of the preseason where he probably gets shunned for the rotation, at least for the time being.
Yeah, I was just saying, I don't even really think we're going to see him before probably the last game or two of the preseason. Like, The last game of the preseason is going to be like a huge dud. That's the one that they're playing New Orleans in. And I'm fairly certain that like RJ is probably going to be sitting and Zion's going to be sitting at that point because they're not going to want to like risk them. And they're going to be playing like the camp guys, you know, just to see like who gets to get the G League spots or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's going to be Iggy's time to shine. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, as long as Knox comes back in the next game. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Iggy again until, you know, at the earliest, the second to last game, but probably the last game of preseason would be the next time we'd see him. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he kind of just was out there. I just thought it was nice to see him actually get a little bit of burn, but
yeah,
it wasn't really anything too impressive from him.
Yeah.
I got
one final quick note that I just
Do it. I was going to say, do you have anything else to add? Because I'm pretty much done.
Yeah, this is it. But I'm just wondering, I was kind of thinking about this when we were talking about Trier. I wonder if the Knicks, and this is full transparency, this is 1:40 in the morning because I got home after work very late and then I had to watch the game. So this is a 1:40 in the morning thought. But I wonder if the Knicks' best long-term lineup is the four guys that started and then in Elfrid Payton's place. And maybe this comes down to how good of a shooter Dennis Smith Jr. ends up being. But I wonder if Alonzo Trier in there would be their best lineup. And if you could get enough sort of point guard facsimile from him and RJ Barrett and like creative juice, just because, and it also sort of sparked this idea when you were talking about how Randall was driving into four guys. Like they just so clearly need more shooting out there with the starters. And Frank, even if he improves, I don't know if he's going to totally provide that this year. Dennis Smith Jr., even if he improves a little bit, I don't know if he'll totally provide that this year. I think Trier genuinely does. And unlike those other two guys, well, maybe Smith does this a little bit, but he really gets a defense moving with how good of an attacker he is. And that's somewhat contingent on him becoming more unselfish. But I think between him, Randall, and Barrett, you would sort of have enough passing. And you'd actually, like, that would be the one Knicks lineup that nominally has like a decent amount of offensive firepower. With 1 through 4, you have guys who could create their own shot with Mitch rolling around that. And I don't know how it actually look. I think it would take a lot of time for those guys to figure out how to play with one another. But I just on paper, I just kind of want to, even if it's not the starters and it just maybe a second unit that comes in or a closing lineup eventually, I would want to see those five out there together.
I think if I had to pick a lineup right now that I really want to see, which is kind of sacrilegious given the fact that I was just tooting Marcus Morris's horn so much earlier, I would say that I'm intrigued by Frank Ntilikina, Wayne Ellington, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, and Mitchell Robinson as the starting lineup. Or potentially, I mean, if Mitch continues to kind of regress like today, see a lineup where you slot Julius down to the 5 and then put Marcus Morris in at the 4 with RJ at the 3, Ellington at the 2, and Frank at the 1. That would be an intriguing lineup to me too.
Okay, now that's sacrilegious, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sit Mitch, but you know, it's just like, it's a matter of, you know, it just depends on how he reels in the fouling thing. Cause he didn't really do it too much in the first game, but he was definitely like, it was like a flashback to like the worst moments of last year with him in this game where he just literally couldn't stay on the floor for more than 5 seconds without fouling somebody.
Yeah, so. It was great. I think he'll get it together though. It's weird because we want to talk about these games. We want to glean a lot from these games, and I think you can, and I think that they're certainly important stuff, but I guess for like, you almost have to like, for the guys, you know, and I'm not saying you're saying like, oh, like Mitch is like doomed or anything, but you almost got to like trust the track record. And obviously it's not good that he had this game tonight, but I think it'll be okay.
I mean, my thing with Mitch is just that the track record isn't there yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he has like 5 years
better for sure. Like over the course of last year.
Yeah. I'm sure. I do have a ton of faith that he's going to make adjustments and stuff and get better. Because that's what Mitchell Robinson does. That's just his trademark. But anyway, all right, let's wrap this one up.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
It's about enough for a shitty loss preseason game. Sure. So that's all for today. We'll be back probably beginning of next week with some more stuff for you guys. Some cool new episodes. Break down the preseason games next week as well. Until then, have a nice weekend. And we will talk to you guys probably on Monday. All right, peace out.